let's talk and let's laugh, cause I got so much to tell you, so let's go kick some.
Kia ora and welcome to Kick Arts with Emma and Stephen, proudly brought to you this month by our fabulous friends at the Dolphin Theatre. Kick Arts is Aotearoa's comprehensive art show, brought to you on Planet FM 104.6 and streaming live around the globe thanks to our podcast, which you can download from planetaudio.org.nz and find us on Spotify. Now tonight we're chatting with authors both here in New Zealand and Australia about their latest books and adventures, plus we're heading to the UK to chat with director Jesse Peach on his new show, bringing back the fabulous Ali Smith to New Zealand, which is about to hit the Q Theatre next month. Now to kick off the show, we heard this week from Nikita Two Bryant with their latest hit, This Is Me Now. It was commissioned as a TV theme song for the show Sik Fan La, the epic culinary doco series spotlighting Kiwi Asian stories around New Zealand through the shared love of kai. This Is Me Now launched just this week and is about feeling estranged and in some cases irrelevant when returning to a place we once called home. A power pop anthem for all those who have immigrated as they find their way straddling two worlds. So thanks for sending this in, Nikita. Here is This Is Me Now.
Traveling through these unknown streets, wear a blank canvas to paint. People I don't know in your picture frames that are on show. Years have gone by and by, yet we both have changed. Now it's time to open minds here today to make our own way. Journey to arrive here today. Every single moment I've lived has led me to now. And with me I brought time capsules of thought, now broken free to be its own curious piece.
This Is Me Now, Nikita Two Bryant. And Nikita is a Taiwan-born Aotearoa artist who has been working as a multidisciplinary artist for over 10 years. She spent the last decade as an actor on Avatar 2, Far North, the TV series, and the World of Wearable Arts headliner in 2024. She's a musician, poet, visual artist, making work and serving her communities with vision, integrity, and strength. She's collaborated with artists from all over the world, and recently her Poneke-based band Kita performed the stages of Womad, Splore, Nelson Arts Festival, and completed a New Zealand-wide tour with their third EP release, Love Lives Here. In late 24, she released her first release as a solo artist since 2016, after being awarded a New Zealand On Air grant for her bilingual single, Chasing Summer, which we'll play a little later in the show tonight. Thanks for sending it in, Nikita. Absolutely fantastic to see what you're up to since we last caught up. Now, Emma's away today is she has been flat out with the Junior Theatre Festival here in New Zealand and has now jumped on a plane to go and do it all again in Australia, which I think is crazy because it's so big. I popped along Friday night and just saw thousands, and I mean thousands, of children and teenagers performing, doing workshops, releasing new pilot programs as part of the Junior Theatre Works. Just absolutely brilliant. She will be absolutely shattered as she then jumps on a plane, sleeps, and does it all again in Australia for the next couple of weeks. So this week you've just got me, but I'm joined by two fabulous returnees to Kick Arts. Big welcome back to Ashley and Sue. Welcome, team.
Hi.
Now, two fabulous authors, and one of the conversations we've had pre-show tonight is what name they go by, because it depends what book you pick up. So, Ashley Lindsay, tell yes. us, what is your pseudonym when you're writing?
I am Sasha A. Linderson.
Brilliant. And do you write alone?
Not yet.
No? Okay.
I guess. Too busy. I have two young kids. I've got a lot of ideas in my head and some half-sketched out books, but I haven't yep. quite got the time to start embarking on a novel of my own that I can confidently finish without going mad.
So who do you write with?
I write with a co-writer in Canada. Her name's Sarah. Sarah Anderson, hence the Sasha, Ashley, Sarah mix.
Okay.
Linderson, last name Lindsay. Her last name's Anderson. Oh. Mash them together.
How many wines did that take to work out?
Not many.
Brilliant, brilliant. All right, we'll talk about your books sure. soon. And look, Sue, I know you by a different name because I've known you for many years, but you write by a couple of different names. So what's your sort of pen name for your different styles of books?
So I decided to choose my pen names by my age. Oh. I would be at the time I was reading them. So all of my picture books, junior fiction and young adults, are Sue Carpenter, which is my maiden name. So that was my name then.
Got it.
I write my poetry under my name, which is my real name, which is Sue Glamuzina, and the books that we'll get onto later, the community books that I also do under Sue Glamuzina. And then I have some, at the moment, I'd call them twisted romance. They're kind of happily never after. So I don't want the same people reading the Sue Carpenter books as those books.
Okay.
So I have Lee Simpson, which is my middle name and my mum's maiden name. So they are all kind of my names until, of course, I started co-writing. And my co-writer, we put our middle names together. So the other one is Rosie Lee, which is middle names.
You could have a whole website just dedicated to who am I. I mean, I get why you do it when you say that, you know, you want to get known, I guess, for that specific age group by that name. Yeah, that's the biggest reason behind it.
It is, yeah.
Yeah, cool. Now, when we last caught up with both of you, you were busy writing your anthology. You've done three, is that right, so far?
We've got three out. The fourth one is just in the very final stages.
And these are through Auckland writers, and they're short fictions, poetries. People contribute, and do both of you kind of edit, pick, and make these books come to life?
We have a team behind us. We take submissions for poems, flash fiction, short story, photography, and art. And they are all based in a specific part of Auckland, so it's the Auckland Writers Group. So the first one was at Domain, Dominion Road, Hauraki Golf. Waitakere Ranges is almost out. And I have been bullied into doing a fifth one.
Ooh, okay.
But at the moment, no one knows.
Ooh. Do you want to announce it now? Shall we save it for the end of the interview? Mate, people keep listening, I reckon. Let's make them keep listening. I'll come back to it. That's awesome.
Come back to the fifth one.
And they've been well received?
They have been. They're all available in the Auckland libraries.
Great.
And we've had been invited to quite a few places to read parts.
Brilliant.
And I go into schools and teach children how to read, write poems and things like that. So there's a lot of first-time children poets and writers and artists in there.
And so cool that it's so local. Stories are local.
Yeah, we also have people like Anne Kennedy and Dominic Hoey and Don McGlashan in there as well. So
brilliant. Ashley, what's it like sort of reading through all the submissions and deciding what goes in and what goes out? Like, is there a bit left on the cutting room table?
Sometimes. We try and include everyone, though. We're really open to working with people who have submitted who maybe we feel like there's something that can be done to elevate their piece. So we'll try as best as we can to work with them. We often provide like a one-on-one editing with those people, and just to try, because we really want to be inclusive and give everyone the opportunity to get their work published and in print, because, you know, that's something that's very, very challenging to do, especially for a lot of independent authors and first-time authors and writers. So we really try and be inclusive to everyone.
So before we talk about the books themselves, let's talk about you as authors. So Ashley, kick it off. When did you sort of first get the bug to write?
I first started writing when I was a teenager. My co-writer, Sarah, we went to the same high school together, actually. And one of our first projects was a school project where we were supposed to pretend that we were in, we were refugees in our own country, and some like fictitious war had come through, and we had to write a story as a group about how we would feel and what we would do. And that kind of spiraled into a love of writing, and actually eventually spiraled into our books, which are nothing like the one we wrote when we were like 13. But, you know, the seeds are still are there.
So when did you first publish?
We published our first book, When the Rain Falls, back in 2020. I can't remember now. A while ago.
Yeah, yeah. Cool. That's awesome. And what about you, Sue? What first kicked it off for you?
I wrote my first, or started writing my first story when I was about 20. I had the character based on my nana, who I loved very much. And then I had to kill her off.
Oh, dear.
And I couldn't kill her off. So I kind of tried to work out how to write the story for about 20 years. I still haven't finished the story. I think I probably have finished, but I haven't shared it with anyone. But I did manage to kill her off.
Imagine that, if it was like a series of books all about your family, and you were like reading it going, hey, on Christmas Day this year, let's not eat the turkey, because in this book.
Definitely. So it took me a long time to actually get my books, and by the time I did publish my first book, I had probably about 100 books that I'd written that still needed editing. So it took a very long time to get the courage to actually take that publishing step.
And you self-publish?
Yes.
Yeah. Do you both self-publish?
Yes.
Yeah. So why did you go down that path rather than using a publisher? Because it's obviously worked for you. You've got so many out.
For me, I went to a workshop about picture books and heard that they only publish about 17, traditionally published children's picture books a year in New Zealand. And I had written one about my children and I wanted to publish it for them. So I went about and just went, I'll just do it. So, with my other books, which we'll probably get to later, they are not a traditional book because it's dyslexic friendly and written for neurodiverse.
So then you're in total control of everything from start to finish.
Yeah.
I bet you've learnt lots over the years as a self, because I think when we first chatted, you were pulling your hair out because it was new and you were trying to work different things out. But now, I mean, if our audiences could see, there's so many books that Sue has brought in tonight, it gives you a sense of how many you're turning out. What's your biggest learning from self-publishing?
I think the step that you're on is always the hardest. So writing was really hard, and then editing was just a nightmare, and then loading it up on Amazon was just disaster. And now I'm up to the selling and marketing, and that feels like the hardest.
Yeah, nice.
Trying to work out TikTok and having to put your face in front of camera and say, come buy my books.
But you go out to libraries and things and read your books too, don't you?
You're very visual
out there.
Yeah. I mainly do markets too. I do.
Yeah.
I really enjoy doing the markets because I enjoy chatting.
Yeah, great. But then people know too that this is a real person here in New Zealand that I'm supporting when buying the books. I think it's great. You've done audio books as well. Have you done audio yet, Ashley?
No, not yet.
No?
We've tossed it up, but haven't quite gotten there. We know it's a lot of effort.
Yeah, yeah. You
know, so we haven't quite done that.
Is that something you're going to continue with, Sue, or do you sort of pick the book and depends?
Having audiobooks is really special, and I would love to, but we have to if I get an opportunity to have another book turn into an audiobook, I would jump at it.
Mm. Is there funding you can apply for in New Zealand for things like this, like to help you with your publishing or to help with audiobooks that you know of?
there is definitely lots of funding out there, but actually getting the funding, we have tried for all of our anthologies to get funding, and because we have children and all different ethnicities and, you know, we thought we had quite a compelling, and we've been to a number of places, but we've not been able to get funding.
You'd think Auckland Council would want to get behind them because they're actual stories of their city. Yeah, plug, Auckland Council, listening. Come on. These are good books, yeah, because that would help towards your costs of audiobooks, etc.
Definitely, yeah. Absolutely.
So you just mentioned before that you write for those with dyslexia. That's a challenge, I imagine, creating a book that suits. So what sort of things are you thinking about when you're creating a book for that audience?
Well, because you know me personally, this may not come as a surprise to you, but I'm pretty sure I've got ADHD. I had a lot of trouble as a child trying to read books. I would read two or three pages and I wouldn't understand every fourth word or something, and it stopped me reading, and I would have to actually look for books that didn't have hard words in them. And lots of people would say, you know, we put hard words in it because it teaches people how to read. And it's like, that's not the case for people who have struggles.
Puts them off.
It actually, you have to be able to fall into a book, and you can't fall into a book and just live the pages if you can't read what's on the pages. So I do not use hard words. I don't do lengthy descriptions. I have a favourite author who's Lee Child, and I literally skip two or three pages every time he starts describing a gun because I know that. you will not find any description of grass for three paragraphs in any of my books. It's they're quite page turners, so so that's sort of the difference. And obviously dyslexic font, and sometimes the white pages are really hard for people. So all of my books are done in cream paper as well.
Interesting. Okay, cool. How did you two meet?
We met through the Auckland Writers Group, actually. We originally met online in a writing critique group, and then eventually met in person at another writing critique group, and just ended up, I guess, vibing. That's probably what you'd say. Common ground.
I mean, you mentioned the Auckland Writers Group. Yes. Is it quite a network in Auckland of writers producing this sort of work?
There's lots and lots and lots of writers out there in Auckland, and the Auckland Writers Group, we've been a bit quiet over the past 18 months, I'd say. We've all been very busy, especially us who try and run it and organise things, but we're just getting it back up and running now, trying to organise critique groups around Auckland, some more anthologies, and also a collaborative series of novels that Auckland writers can also contribute to help them write and then publish their first novels. So lots of exciting things out there if you're a writer.
So when you say critique, you're actually sharing each other's books and giving feedback?
Yes.
How do you cope with that?
I enjoy it, both giving feedback and receiving feedback. I think it's amazing, to be honest. We used to have a long-standing critique group with the same six or seven people in it, all from Auckland writers, and we managed to share like consecutive chapters over the course of a couple years, especially over COVID, which was amazing because we actually got feedback while writing, like in the progress of a novel, and were able to make changes as we went, fix plot holes as we went, and get really good ideas off the other writers. And we're all writing in different genres as well, so we weren't, you know, you really got fresh eyes on what you were writing because, for example, I was writing at the time historical fiction, and then another writer was doing sci-fi, then we have some contemporary. It was all over the place, so that was amazing.
That's great.
We also got to go to each other's book launches, which was really great.
Yes.
We've stayed friends. Just wanted to add about the series that we're doing. So we're actually starting next week or in the next couple of weeks. So it's the same as the anthologies, but we actually write an entire book each. So we will each write 3,000 words 1 month and then critique each other's work and then carry on with the next month. And all of the everyone's novels are all set in the same fictitious, I hate that word.
Yeah, you got it right.
Fictitious island. So
you write the same. You're writing the same book, but 3,000 words each.
And no, we're writing. I think there's about 12 of us, so we're writing 12 separate novels.
Wow!
So for the likes of my character, I'm going to be writing someone who's adopted and is trying to find their birth mum, and one of the other characters on the island will be my birth mum. So we are yet to find out who. So everyone is writing their own novel, but all of the novels will have crossovers with. So there'll be one person that runs the corner shop or the island shop. So that person will feature in everybody's novels. One person is writing a sci-fi. I'll be writing a drama. I don't know. Ashley, do you know what you're writing?
Not yet. Watch this space.
Someone else is talking about a prison escapee. So they will all be different, and then we will release them. It will probably take 2 years or so, but we'll release them 2 weeks apart, all in the same season. So they will...
Wow, that's good. Is that part of Auckland Writers?
It's a part of Auckland Writers.
Nice. How can people find out about Auckland Writers if they're listening now?
There's a Facebook page, Auckland Writers.
Fantastic. All right. We're going to take a music break. Then after the break, I'm going to ask the question, where is the next anthology taking place? Plus, we'll explore some more books that are on our counter. Now, I heard today some friends and family heading overseas to see Pretty Woman, the musical that's on in Australia. So I thought I'd do a little listen and see if it's any good. Here is Anywhere But Here.
I look around and what I see is I don't belong here, this isn't me. What have I become? I'm really not this girl. Is that all there is? What's it gonna take to get off the streets? When do I get a break? It's not what I wanted, this is not my world. I know where I choose to go. If I could disappear anywhere but here, anywhere but here. I can feel something coming. I long to be free. I just wanna be anywhere but here. My soul, I've gotta make some changes and take control. I need room to move, I wanna feel the wind in my head. A clear blue sky with air to breathe. I feel it's time to fly, 'cause I believe that there's so much more and it's waiting for me. I wanna share it all with someone who'd share it all with me. I believe somehow, someday, that's the way it will be. Anywhere but here, anywhere but here. I can feel something coming, I long to be free. I just wanna be.
Anywhere But Here, Pretty Woman, the musical, great movie back in its day, opening or running now in Brisbane. I said to the team in here, I don't know if I picked the right song, but actually I warmed to it the more it played. I think I got into that one the more it went. Now, Sue, you've also got some picture books on the table, some about Auckland, some in Te Reo, obviously aimed at our early childhood bracket.
Yes, they are. sort of, there's the early ones and they go up to sort of about 6-7 year olds. So depending on what age, I've got 9 picture books out.
That's cool. How do you, as a writer, switch your brain between a picture book, a very adult book, a teenage book, a kid's book, and then something about Auckland City? How do you have to just work in one space at a time and go, I need to get this done? Or I'm guessing the Sue I know is jumping between all of them doing little bits. So how do you switch that brain?
When I get a book idea, I write it down and then I work on it later. So I literally did a TikTok today trying to show people what I was working on. I'm not sure what I will actually focus on, but I just get an idea. So I had a lot of ideas when my children were young.
Yeah.
So those ideas and sort of what became that. And a lot of them I have been working on for like 9-10 years. I've got one which I'm still working on. So they take, you know, and then other times you'll just write one and it'll just flow.
Yeah, yeah. With the picture books and also your covers of the others, who do you use to illustrate like a picture book? Do you have different people? Depends on the book?
I've got you won't be able to see, but the one I'm holding up, I illustrated myself.
How so silly.
Lame.
That's cool.
And it's so lame that the children can relate to it.
Yeah.
And that's the one that I've also had translated into Tadeo, which is one of my most popular books. My most recent one is in Auckland. It's got lots of Auckland scenery and Myers Park and Sky Tower and things like that in it. And there's 5 of those books. And I used an author that I met on Fiverr.
Mm-hmm.
For those, I've got a wonderful illustrator called Marley, who's currently in Auckland, and spoke to him yesterday. He's done my Puzzle and Pearls and Lavender and Pearls books, and is currently doing a Treasure and Pearls for my 3rd book in that series. So that's, having a local artist is really great. And we haven't actually said this yet, but Ashley and I are co-writing a book, and Marley is commissioned to do the cover for that as well, which is very exciting. And then on my other book that I've co-written, she does all the covers for us. So.
That's cool. That's cool. A really good mix. So tell us about the one you're co-writing together.
It is, well, one of my passions is ancient Greece.
Yeah.
And with my, not Sue, my other co-writer, that's what our, we're doing a joint historical fiction novel set in ancient Greece, and Sue picked up on that. And she had a great idea for like a middle grade fiction specifically targeted for boys, because there's not a lot of books out there that they, you know, are really interested in. So that's sort of the premise for it, a bit of an adventure that dabbles in ancient Greece. I don't want to tease too much. It's still in progress.
Great. Okay.
It's also the ancient Greece part, Ashley's completely writing by herself, and I'm writing the crazy imagination thing, which a little boy gets to go all over the world into places he doesn't necessarily want to go. So I'm writing that character.
It must take a certain, you mentioned, I think, vibe. You used the word earlier that too, you vibed well. Like, it must take the certain personalities to be able to write together, because you are writing so personal. It's anything creative is personal. How do you make sure you sort of look after each other and go, okay, I really don't like that, but I get where you're coming from. Like, do you have those sort of robust conversations?
We don't really have to, because we've been critiquing each other's work for like 7 years, and I think we know where each other needs.
Right.
And I think the magic word, if it was a one word question, is patience.
Right. Yeah, fair enough.
Definitely. Yeah. I would agree. I think a lot of the co-writing, it's kind of just understanding that both of you have different strengths and different weaknesses, and using the strengths and weaknesses to your advantage. Like for Sue and I, like my strength's definitely more in the historical fiction, less about being in the imaginative mind of a 12-year-old boy. So we've strategically divided the story like that to hopefully make the most of what we're both good at.
Yeah.
And then you can obviously also then edit each other's work to, you know, elevate both of yours.
It's also compromise. Like the book that I've done under Rosie Lee, I I come from a religious background and I don't like using the Lord's name in vain, which I'm very passionate about, where my co-writer kept putting that in. And then she is a vegetarian and didn't like describing meat being cooked. So we had to just...
One all here, folks.
You know, you just... You realise what each other has passions for and you're like, we can have a vegetarian lasagna, not a problem.
What do you do, I guess, especially I'm thinking perhaps more your teenage books, you know, you've obviously got teenagers at home, that probably makes it easier. I was going to say, what do you do to make sure you're staying up to date with the latest trends, language, expressions? I embarrassed my daughter the other night because she kept texting me about something and I replied, Slay, Perth, something else, Queen. And she was like, yeah, you're learning. But what do you do to make sure you're keeping up to date?
I am a few years ago, when I write, I edit by listening back to I have the word play it back through the car when I'm driving.
I am.
I'm always driving the kids around, so the kids are always listening to my work anyway. And in the process of doing that, I had the word naff, and my kids were just like, Mum, they've never let me live it down. Like, nobody under the age of, I don't know, 30 ever wants to hear the word naff. So
they're your editors.
Yeah. I just get them to look over it. Plus, I have a number of really amazing teenagers that are on the journey with me, and they read my books before I put them out. So
yeah, I guess that's so important, just to keep hitting that level, but it's constantly changing at a huge speed.
Yes.
Where do you see the place of books today in this world where so, especially I think of teenagers, so many are on their devices. We've got AI now saying that you can write a book in an hour with AI, plug in your best idea and it will write it. Like, where do you see your place in this world?
AI can write books, but are they good?
Yeah, don't know. Haven't read one.
I've been to a few workshops on them and AI doesn't get the emotion, and I'm an emotional writer. So, and when you think of picture books and things like that, you know, nobody ever envisions being a grandmother and snuggling up with their baby and having device time. You know, it's book time, and there are some aspects that I don't think will change, but there are definitely aspects, and a lot of authors use AI to their advantage, trying to write a blurb and things like that. Like,
oh, perfect for marketing.
There's lots of things that AI can help. I haven't gone down that path, but I know a number of people who have and have found it beneficial.
Yeah. How do you think we keep encouraging young people to read?
That's a very good question.
It's a tough one, eh?
It is. I'm actually a girl guide leader. So I have a group of rangers who are all in the anthology. I basically force them to write and contribute something.
Do they get a writer's badge or something? Is the girl guides, do you get badges?
Oh, we do get badges, yes.
Yeah. Oh, come on, you need the Auckland writer's badge.
We should have an Auckland writer's badge. But I found that a lot of them really do want to read, and they're always looking for new authors, new things to read, new topics to read. I don't know if that's just the demographic of girls that are in my unit, but it is very encouraging, I think. And a lot of them, it's very cute, like, bring their current book that they're reading to the unit, and then everyone's like, oh, what are you reading? Oh, that's amazing, blah, blah, blah.
I remember being at high school and you got the little pamphlet, I don't know if it was Scholastic, and you got to buy books, and so you would work out your pocket money, and then Mum and Dad would throw a little bit extra, and you worked out, and I think I was always allowed to get it, like a fiction, a comic, a journal, and I used to love it. I forget what they were called.
Scholastic.
It was
Lucky Book Club.
That's it.
They still do it.
Oh, yay. That was so cool. And it was also teaching budgeting, because I can remember having conversations with my parents, and this was the budget, and then you go, well, I really want that one, but maybe this, oh, I loved it. And then they arrive, and the day they arrive, and you bring them home. It was so cool.
I think they do them all online now, though.
Oh, see, that's not fun.
You want the catalogue, right?
Yes. You've got to break the cash in the elephant and get all the coins out that you've saved. Stop buying the 50-cent mellow puffs at morning tea. I'm really showing my age. But it was so cool. All right. Haven't got too much longer to go. So let's talk about your latest anthology. Where are we heading next? next?
We are heading to the heart of Auckland, to Queen Street.
Ooh, Queen Street. That's going to have some interesting stories, especially post-COVID, because I live right in Queen Street, or just at the corner of it, and I can write some stories for you.
Would you write some stories? We can feature you as
Saturday night out Stephen's window. That would be a story. Cool. What made you pick Queen Street?
Actually, it was the last launch that we do. So each of these that we do, we meet in High Street and have a launch there, and everyone comes in and has photos with their books and talks to the other authors, and the ones that are brave stand up and read. Someone got held up in Queen Street in traffic. And they were like, we should do an anthology in Queen Street. And there was about five of them, and they all wanted to do that. And I was like, I don't want a negative anthology, because when you have to edit 70 negative stories, it's really quite hard. So I was like, everyone wants to do Queen Street, but I don't want negative. And then I've spoken to a whole lot of people, and they've said, I can do a positive Queen Street story. So, I mean, there will still be negative. There was the big protest last week.
Yeah, but you can also switch a negative. I mean, people could say, for example, I know a couple of listeners to our show who were part of the original Farmers when it opened there.
Wow.
And part of Smith & Coey. Now, you could say, yes, the negative of Smith & Coey closing, but imagine the stories they must have known through years of working in a department store like that.
Well, if they want to share
switch
them.
Switch it around, yeah. So how do people get in touch and submit their ideas to you?
Auckland Writers, the Facebook page. We have an email as well, which is
AucklandWriters@gmail.com.
That one.
Brilliant. Okay. And what's your sort of time frame? When do people get things in, and when does it come out?
The one that we're doing for the Waitakere is about to go out to the submitters to check that they're happy with how we've put it together, and then that should be coming out in December. So I suppose now that we've told you it's Queen Street, free for all, I guess submissions are open now for Queen Street, and then they'll probably be open. We'll do a proper form and things like that, so in a couple of weeks.
Right.
And then probably close in the 1st of March, we did last year. So
bit of time to get your thoughts together.
It's all run... there's definitely been no profit made in these.
Mm.
So all of the editors and volunteers, the cover designer, everyone that works on them are all volunteers, and we all have lives and other books and things like that. So it does take a long time.
Fair enough. That's all right. Well, we'll look forward to launching it in a year or so's time. And where can people go to find your books, find out more about you, social media, audiobooks, etc.?
You can head over to our website, which is lindersoncreations.com, sticking with the pen name there. And we also have Linderson Creations on Instagram and TikTok.
Brilliant. And Sue, how can people track down all your different bits and pieces?
I have everything under susielee.nz or .co.nz, depending on if it's a book or TikTok or Instagram, or Sue Carpenter on Facebook.
Amazing. Thank you for coming in and bringing all your books. So cool to see your different range, Sue, and we'll look forward to seeing the Waitakere ranges coming out hopefully before Christmas.
Yes.
Amazing. Thanks so much for coming on to Kick Arts.
Thank you for having us.
All right, the start of the show, we featured Nikita Tu Bryant. Here is the Chasing Summer song I referenced in our intro.
Like the skin, we've all got to shed some. 太多想逃避，但我们依然继续执迷。我的身体放开所有怀疑，我永远不想失去了你，我永远不想失去了你。你要走了吗？再消失了吗？你要走了吗？再消失。
Me has it so down. I ain't got time to wait around. While you come to realize I've given in too many times, I've given in too many times. And you're chasing the suburb again. And I'm left behind. Once again I'm left behind. The night of winter again. What you running from? What you think you're running toward?
You're even my year.再次只剩我和你，词不达意，误会太多，想逃避，但我们依然继续沉溺。我的身体放开所有怀疑，我永远不想失去了你，我永远不想失去了你。你要走了吗？再消失了吗？你要走了吗？再消失。Not the moon once again, it's just me and you. Words too soon, running from what we don't have a clue.
Jacine Summer, Nikita 2 Bryant and on Ogri. And that was the song that was awarded the New Zealand On Air grant for the bilingual single. Wonderful collaboration there. And 2 Bryant has just finished the most ambitious work of her career to date, a four-part film titled Love Lives Here, inspired by the band's latest EP. The film is currently being considered for film festivals locally and abroad and destined to be translated into a cinematic theatre experience with her live band Kitta and a chorus of performers. Thanks so much, Nikita, for sending all your info in tonight. If you've got some new music being released, email us info@kickarts.org.nz. Well, we haven't had authors on for a while, but tonight we are now up to author number 3, but we are crossing the ditch to one of my favourite parts in Aussie, and that is Melbourne. And a very big good evening to Caroline Stills. Welcome.
Thank you so much, Stephen. Lovely to be here.
It's great to have you here. And we're here to talk about your book, A Gift from the Birds. But before we do, tell us a little bit about you. When did you first kick off your writing career?
Okay. I think I started as a writer really as a child. So I grew up in a little farming community in Green Park, which is just outside of Christchurch in the South Island.
Right.
And I just, as soon as I went to school and learnt to read, I just loved books. So I would just devour books. And from that, sort of started to love writing as well. And then when I was an adult, I was always going to, you know, write the novel. Went to uni and started a career and... you know, as it does, life gets in the way. And then I had my first baby and I was a stay-at-home mum and I thought, here's my chance. Mm-hmm. I've got the time to write now. And then, of course, I had babies that didn't sleep, so I was exhausted all the time. I joined a writer's group and I did little bits and it took me a few years to write my first novel manuscript, but that's sort of how I got my start in writing. As far as children's writing goes, we were really lucky. I live in the Dandenong Ranges, which is about 40 k's out from the city. And so, you know, to go to the most writers' workshops and stuff, it's a bit of a distance to travel. So the Victorian Writers' Centre for quite a few years sponsored my writing group to have a professional come and talk to us about some aspect of writing. And one of the early years when I still had, you know, young children at home, it was a picture book person who taught us about picture books and how they're 32 pages and mm-hmm. how they work with pictures. And I got inspired and wrote my first picture book story, and that was my first publication.
That's cool. Now, we've just had two local authors in on the show, and, you know, that talking about the writers group was so important. They're part of Auckland Writers, which is a social media group. They meet, they critique each other. How important did you see sort of those groups for you in your career?
Oh, extremely. Like, there's nobody that really understands the writer's life than another writer. So, yeah, my group is great. We're like a really good support emotionally to each other, but we've also done critiquing. And, like, I wouldn't send a manuscript to a publisher without having someone that I trust read through it first, give me feedback, you know, rewrite based on what resonates with me from the feedback. So I think, yeah, they're vital to me anyway.
And you've gone down the publishing route rather than self-publishing?
Yes.
Yeah. Interesting. So our last two were self-published. How do you find in Australia that sort of, you know, opportunity for publishing? We were talking here that, you know, picture books, for example, only 17 get published in a year for children here in New Zealand. What's it like in Australia?
Well, it's a really tough industry. You've got to have a really thick skin to cope with all the rejection. I was, like, looking back, I was so lucky because the first picture book manuscript that I wrote did get accepted for publication, but I've written many more since then that not all of them have been published. And, yeah, it's really, really tough. We are lucky in some ways in Australia that most publishers are open to submissions. Like, if you're in America or somewhere like that, you have to get an agent first. You can't send stuff straight to publishers.
Right.
So I totally understand the frustration and you know, that self-publishing is an option for some people these days.
So tell us about your latest book, A Gift from the Birds. What's this all about and who's it aimed at?
Well, this is actually my first published novel. So I've kind of had that dream come true, although it's a children's novel, but the first manuscript I wrote wasn't. But this book is for middle grade readers, so that sort of 8 to 12 year old, so I guess late primary, early secondary stage. It's about a little girl who's 10 years old and she loses her mum to cancer, and it's how some crows in her backyard help her and her dad deal with their terrible loss. So I guess you could say it's a book about grief and the healing power of nature.
Oh, that sounds nice, and nice for anyone that perhaps is going on a journey like that, trying to understand everything. What made you think about writing it from this angle?
Well, I was originally inspired by stories that I've read about birds all across the world, wild birds that when people have fed them, they've given them gifts, like they've come back with like a little something they found, like a shell or a rusty nail or something like that. And I just thought that was just a really charming idea for a picture book. That's what I was originally writing, because I love that sharing relationship and the intelligence of birds. So one day in my front yard here, I saw a kookaburra in the tree holding this stuffed toy. It was as big as the bird was, and I thought, that's it. I'm going to write a picture book, and the gift from the birds is going to be they found the lost toy that's so precious to this child. But as I was writing it, I wanted more. I wrote it as a picture book, but then I felt like it needed more. I wanted the gift to be more than an object, something more intangible, something more important. And it ended up being healing, the gift of healing, and a little girl who loses her mum, and that the birds help her deal with her grief. So, yeah, obviously that's a lot bigger than a picture book.
And
that's a junior novel.
That's cool. And you won the Tex Prize.
Yes, that was amazing and wonderful.
Is that an Australian-wide... I'm not familiar with it over here.
Oh, okay, yes. Well, it's an award an annual award. Unfortunately, I'm the last prize winner, but it's been running for many, many years, and it's looking at middle grade and YA novels, so novels for children, and you get to submit, and then they choose a winner, and part of the prize is getting your book published. So I was very fortunate to
that's
be
cool.
the 2024 winner, so my book has just come out in August.
Brilliant. Love it. Congratulations. Now, we were just talking with our earlier guests about getting teenagers to still read, you know, and I was talking about me as a teenager saving all my pocket money, and we used to get these lucky book clubs, they were called, the little notices that came home, and you got to choose certain ones to buy. You'd do your budgeting, and then you'd wait a week or two, and they'd turn up on a Friday. And just that excitement behind getting books as a young child, what is it like today? And I guess, are you seeing any trends in Australia? You know, are we moving into such a world on our devices that we're struggling, or are we seeing a bit of a return to books, especially in schools?
It's a tough one because the environment that, like, my daughters have grown up in is totally indifferent to what I grew up in. And you're right, there's so much, you know, electronically that's just available at their fingertips. So I think we really are, as writers, competing with that. And I've been to a few sort of seminars and stuff lately, and publishers and writers are talking about how we have to grab attention of the children straight away, because they're used to that instant, you know, click on a button and there it is, all is. So you've got to grab their attention straight away. And not, I think books are probably getting a little bit shorter. And I don't know if that's just a temporary thing, because there's still kids that just love reading big books as well. And hopefully we'll always have them. But also, you know, kids are being exposed to books through TikTok.
Yeah.
So I know a lot of books that my daughter read as a teenager, she learned about through TikTok. So that's the positive side of, you know, the social media and stuff, that if there's this community that they all can connect with each other and talk about books, and she learned about a lot of the books that she read through, you know, TikToks and other, you know, teenagers who love books as well.
It's so the modern book club. We're not coming round and having a conversation over a wine. We're jumping on TikTok.
Absolutely.
Brilliant. What part does social media play for you? Like, are you having to yourself do more on social media for that marketing purpose?
Well, I'm really fortunate, being published with text publishing, that I have a publicist.
Great.
So I'm kind of leaving a lot of it to her, which obviously when you're self-published, you can't. But saying that, like, she did encourage me to, you know, start posting a little bit more on Instagram, because I'm not really an Instagram person, so I've tried to push myself out of my comfort zone. But, yeah, it's really hard as an author to know how to promote yourself, how to get yourself out there, and really you can just do your best and keep your fingers crossed that you want your book.
Yeah, yeah. The other thing we were chatting about earlier, I guess, is the rise of AI and the amount of adverts and things that pop up on your Facebook feeds, etc., where, you know, you can download an app, put in your best story idea, and it writes your book for you. Are you feeling, you know, we do a lot of music on this show, and we interview a lot of musicians who are really feeling the pinch of this AI now taking the songs, and certainly when we've played tracks on here, people can't work out as an AI voice or not. That's how good it is. Is it similar in the writer's world? Are we a little bit worried where AI is taking this, or is this a great opportunity for a budding writer to, you know, test their ideas out?
Well, interestingly, the picture book contracts that I got earlier in my career obviously didn't talk about AI, but my last contract that I signed, I had to sign that I didn't use AI as part of the creation.
Cool.
So publishers don't want AI. They want genuine writers,
yeah.
which I'm really pleased about. And, like, there's a bit of outrage at the moment, and rightly so, about, you know, the people that are creating all this AI, how they're stealing writers. They're using what we've written and condensing it all and using that to churn stuff out, and we're not getting compensated for it.
Well, no, because you can also say, I want it written in the style of Caroline Stills, and AI looks that up. So it's also in your vibe.
Yes. Yeah, it is a worry. It definitely is a worry for all the creative arts of where it's going. And I'm just hoping that, you know, true creative stories and art still get their place out there, and it doesn't take over.
How do you switch as an author between writing children's books and adult books? Where does, do you just focus on one area at a time, or are you switching between?
Well, I'm mainly writing children's books.
Right.
Yeah, there is a variation between, like, a picture book, and I write all the way up to YA. They're all quite different.
Yeah.
So I find, like, some people can have several projects on a go at once, but I find I need to put the time into one at a time, because then you're in the headspace for it, particularly with the longer, you know, novels. I can't go from a middle grade to a YA back to a middle grade to a
YA
all in one week. It has to be one or the other. And that's just the way I work.
Do you have a sort of structure in your day when you're writing? I forgot to ask our last two guests, because I'm always fascinated by this question. Like, are you a wake up and must write? We've had people say, no, I'm an end of day. Others say, no, I treat it like work. I go from this time to this time and that's it. Although my favourite is still the lovely lady in the South Island who gets into her spa pool at 6 a.m. every morning, has a spa and immediately gets out and writes. I think she wins the creativity award. What do you do? What's your routine?
I don't really have a routine, to be honest. I'm not a routine person. And I find I tend to write better in chunks of time.
Okay.
So, for example, with A Gift from the Birds, I wrote a lot of that when I was away with my writers group. We have an annual retreat where we go away for a few days. And, you know, I just put my head down, like, I've got no distractions, no kids, don't have to worry about cooking dinner, doing the washing, you know, all that. It's just that intense time to write. And so sometimes I'll just take myself off for a day or two, even if it's to lock myself in the house and just say, don't disturb me. That's the way I write best.
Brilliant. Love it. Well, look, we really appreciate you coming and chatting with us on a Sunday night. A Gift from the Birds is available now in all good bookstores, or do a good old Google and it pops up with where you can purchase it online. Caroline Stills, thank you so much for joining us from Melbourne this evening.
Thank you so much, Stephen. It was lovely chatting.
Absolutely brilliant. And we'll look forward to catching up when you write your next one.
Thank you.
All right. Take care. After the break, we're going to catch up with the Auckland Theatre List and see what's happening in your town. Plus, we're chatting with Jessie Peach from the UK, about to bring a fabulous and very special heartwarming show to New Zealand. Right now, here is My Days, and this is from The Notebook stage show, the North American Tour. Enjoy.
Where am I? Where am I going? Is it somewhere that I want to go? And when I get there, is that where happy is? Or is it somewhere I already know? Sometimes I feel somebody chose my choice. I have to run away. I have to sit and stay. I want to live a life where I'm allowed to say that I'm proud of the way that I spend my days. I can feel something growing. It is small, but it's shifting the ground. When I was younger, I could hear it, but it's back. It's my sound. Sometimes I feel like I lost my days. All we ever really get are days to dream and days to lose. I just need to choose my time. I have to run away. I have to stay.
Days from Notebook, the musical North American tour. Oh my goodness, that was amazing. Did that not? Oh, just rocked it. Now I'm very curious and want to find out more, so I'll have to listen to some more of The Notebook. Now, shows coming up, thanks to the Auckland Theatre List. We've got the Fizz live comedy, Think Whose Line Is It Anyway, taking place on the 31st of October with a Christmas show on the 14th of November at the Vic Devonport. Head to thevic.co.nz. The Pink Hammer is on at Phoenix Theatre, and we talked about that last week, the hilarious Kiwi comedy, from Thursday the 30th of October to the 8th of November at the Pump House. Head to thepumphouse.co.nz. Coming up soon, we have Life on a Loop, Peach Theatre Company, and we're going to talk to Jesse in just a few minutes all about that one. But so that you've got it ready, head to qtheatre.co.nz. That's where you'll get the tickets. Titirangi Theatre has The Importance of Being Earnest, opening Tuesday the 18th of November to the 29th of November. Of course, it's Oscar Wilde's most brilliant comedy, when two young men invent alter egos to escape social obligations. Their tangled lives spark a whirlwind of mistaken identities, sharp humour and sparkling satire. Go and check it out at titirangitheatre.co.nz. Our friends at Foolish Wit have Little Women taking place from the 19th of November through to the 23rd at the Pump House. Kate Hamill's adaptation of Louisa M. Alcott's timeless classic Little Women views the story of the March sisters through a different lens. Jo tells Beth a real story which unfolds on the stage as it plays out in Jo's imagination. It's a story of four sisters dealing with the struggles of growing up and their different ambitions against the background of a war, and what they see serves no purpose but to deprive them of their father. It's a fresh take on a coming-of-age story, has a few laughs, some tears and an unruly parrot to add to the fun. As I said, from the 19th of November, head to pumphouse.co.nz. The Dolphin Theatre, our sponsors for this month, have It's a Wonderful Life, a fabulous Christmas story for you to enjoy from the 21st of November to the 6th of December. It's set in Christmas Eve 1946 in Bedford Falls. Down on his luck banker George Bailey feels life has passed him by and he's at the end of his rope. But when George's guardian angel pays him a visit, he's amazed to discover what life in his beloved town would look like without him. Maybe it's a wonderful life after all. Based on the critically acclaimed Frank Capra movie, Mary Elliott Nelson's reimagining is a joyful story of love, hope and community. So head to the Dolphin Theatre, find them on Google for all the details for them. HR the Musical number 2, we've chatted to them before. They are back from the 25th of November to the 6th of December at Q Theatre. And that's Dick and his band of generic employees are back and things have got personnel. It's time to restructure again with a completely new show of riotous musical sketch comedy from the team that brought you the runaway 2024 hit HR the Musical. Head to qtheatre.co.nz. And of course, you can find out lots of other things that are taking place by just signing up to the Theatre List. Head to thetheatrelist.com for your updates on what's happening, and send them yours as well. But don't forget to email us info@kickarts.org.nz so that we can promote it too. Taking a quick song break now before we catch up with Jesse Peach. This is Park Road, who have been busy this weekend, a long weekend here in Auckland, or in New Zealand, I should say, with lots of performances. Here's Anecdote.
Yesterday came so quick, I was-
Kick-Arts, Jessie, beaming in from the other side of the world for us as you're about to make your journey back home.
I know. Thank you so much for having me, and it's so nice to see you because, you know, I grew up in West Auckland, so I know you very well.
Yes, I think the first time I met you was a young Charlie in the Chocolate Factory at Glen Eden Intermediate.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, my goodness. It's actually a long time ago now. How long ago would that be? 30 years, probably?
Yeah. Time flies, though. And you've done so much in theatre and television and journalism. And now you're bringing something very special back home. And Life on a Loop is the show.
Yeah.
Tell us all about it, first of all. What is the show about?
Well, the show is, it's a solo show written by Ali Smith, who is an amazing New Zealand actor who I remember very well. I saw her in, I think it was the End of the Rainbow, isn't it?
Yeah.
The show that, by City. She was so wonderful. And I didn't actually know her. So, like, I live in London, she lives in London, and Bruce Phillips, who's another Kiwi actor, he was visiting, and he said, you must meet Ali, like, you know, you'll love her. And I met her, and within literally 4 or 5 months, we were putting this play on.
Amazing.
Because she said it to me, and it moved me so much, because she used to be a singer in rest homes in, like, the south of England, like, really run-down ones. And she'd started writing a play during COVID, and it was all about, like, it's sort of, it's very funny, and, like, but it's very, sort of very sad, but it's very funny. It's all about sort of loneliness and getting old, but sort of like the way these people sort of stay young in their hearts. And it, like, I read it straight away and it moved me so much. And I just rang her and said, we've got to do this. And she said, well, you can do it. Like, you can put it on my play. And I said, no, we have to do it. Like, you have to do it. And somehow we just sort of ended up here. And she's actually getting on the plane, like, I think, as we speak. So it's pretty cool. It's, like, really exciting.
Well, I remember many different shows and television shows seeing Ali, so it was so cool to see both your names on this. And what's it like for you, I guess, bringing it back home?
Well, for me, it just feels kind of right. Like, I haven't been doing so much theatre in New Zealand. I'm always on the lookout for something. And, like, the thing that made me want to bring it home was on the first night, people kind of stayed around, which was kind of weird, and everyone wanted to talk, and they wanted to talk about their parents and, like, their own lives and, like, what was going on for them. And I thought, something is going on with this play. Like, this is really interesting. And even when we did our second run, like, an older theatre director that I know who, he's really nice, but he's very honest. And I thought, oh gosh, I hope he likes it. You know, like, when you know what it's like when people come along and care about you, think, please like it. And he just sort of stayed around and, like, started talking to me, like, with tears in his eyes about his mum and all this stuff. And I was like, oh, this is great. Like, I have to take this home. It's like, it's a really, really special work. And Ali is amazing. And she's kind of got a way of, like, there's a poetry about what she writes. But because she's such a fantastic, deep actor, she can just take you away. Like, she's really incredible. So it's just, for me, it's like, it's actually quite weird talking to you because I haven't really had an interview like this yet, like a radio interview. Yeah. And so I haven't really explained it, but I'm thinking, it's kind of, when I'm saying it out loud, it's like, oh, well, we're actually coming.
We're actually doing this.
We're actually doing this. It's really cool.
So talk us through the rehearsal period. What's it like directing up a one-person show?
Do you know what? I hadn't done it before.
Yeah, it's quite. No, I haven't done one. No, I think six has been my smallest.
Well, do you know what? The thing I would say about it is it's so sort of intimate because it's just you two. Mm. That there's a lot of trust that needs to be built, which we really, really did build. And I think you've got to be really honest with each other, you know, and just, and so, like, I think we started with, like, a lot of reading and then we sort of moved it around a bit. But there was a lot of talking about, like, sort of what it means and where it's kind of going and things like that. And it sort of just found its feet quite naturally. And, you know, Ali's done every job in the theatre. She even ran downstage. Like, she's got an ONZM for, I don't even know if anyone knows that. Was it NZM, NZM or some? She's got letters after her name. It's a big deal.
Yeah.
I didn't know that, but it's just like another line in her bio. She's really like, she knows what she's doing. So like, yeah, so I've enjoyed doing the one-person show, and I'd like to do more, actually.
Is there a lot of sort of give and take in rehearsals where, you know, you allow Ali, I guess, to shape it, or is it very much, no, she's looking for that direction, or is it a bit of both?
Well, it's a bit of both. Like, Ali really, like, knows herself and knows her mind, which I love, but I kind of do too, I think.
Yeah.
Even though I'm not too. So like, so we have good, like, robust discussions, and we always get somewhere. We think, yes, we've got it. And you know that feeling when you know it's right. We often stumbled upon that, but it was not always easy getting to that point. But it was really exciting, actually. And we re-rehearsed the play as well for this season, because we did it twice in London.
Okay.
So she went back and revised the script and tightened it and made it even better. And that was interesting doing it the second time, because we knew each other. It was a lot more sort of interesting and progressive, I thought, because we were just sort of firing off each other. And when you've got that trust and you know each other...
Yeah.
And you know how each other works and things. It's cool. So, yeah.
Given your audience feedback and the stories they've told you, was there any point that you went, we need to add some of this or tweak some of this based on what you're hearing? Or did you go, no, we're obviously hitting the right line, so it's just little tweaks that are needed?
Yeah. It's an interesting question, actually. I'm not sure quite what the answer is, but I think this is right, that I think... I've always said to Ali, this is your play and you're the writer. Like, I'll sort of give feedback, but I really didn't want to be that person. And she had her people who were helping give that sort of feedback. And I just didn't want to interrupt that process too much. So
nice.
What would happen is it would be more likely that she'd say, I feel like I should change this. What do you think? And I'd say, actually, I think you're right. Go for it. And then she'd say, do you think this is good? And I'd be like, yeah, great. Or, oh, she could just tell my face, and then it's... so it's collaborative, but I'm not taking any responsibility for her amazing writing, because she's an amazing writer.
Yeah, yeah. So she's on a plane on her way back, so she can't possibly comment here. So how is she feeling? How do you think Ali's feeling about bringing...
I think she's excited. Yeah. It's funny, because when I first pitched the idea, she was like, I'm not doing that, because the idea of coming home after 17 years, she was like, I can't do that. It's too much. And then we had more discussions, and then she sort of said, okay, fine, let's do it. And now it's exciting, yeah.
Right. Great. Yeah. So tell us about you, Jessie. What, you know, if we love on Kick Arts to ask this question, take us back. Yeah. When did the arts first start for you, and what have you been doing since you left New Zealand?
Oh, okay. How far back do we want to go?
Go back. What kicked it off for you?
As a kid, weirdly, I had this, I grew up in Glen Eden, which is sort of like, it's the burbs in West Auckland. And we had this sort of basement, and I like sort of begged my dad to put up a curtain, because I always wanted to put on shows, and like, it's from a big family, and I'd always dress up as a girl, of course, and then like I'd force them like to sort of stand there and hold toys or say lines and that sort of thing. So right from that age, I was sort of really interested in begging to go to drama classes and just doing drama at school. And And then I made a really good friend, Beth Allen. Do you know Beth?
Yeah.
I saw her. There was this thing called, this is a bit of a tangent, but just an aside. Mm-hmm. I just find this so amazing. When there was this thing called the Intercity Choir Festival or something that was conducted at Calston Girls High School, and there was about like 20 schools and maybe like 500 kids, and we were all up on the stage singing. And there was this girl who was like, had this bob haircut, and she was like doing, they did Mr. Mistopheles, and she was so alert and so present. I would watch her every move. And then she ended up in my class in intermediate school, and it was Beth Allen. And she was like working in television, and she sort of opened my eyes a bit to that world. And her parents were very sort of cultured and wonderful, and they sort of got the feeling that I like theatre. So they used to drag me along to like Sydney on their theatre trips and stuff.
Oh,
so, like,
amazing.
So I always feel like I owe it to them, that they, Lorraine and Jolyon, they really sort of opened my eyes properly to that world and let me really indulge in it. And by the time I was sort of 16, all my money I was earning at this bird shop I was working in, I was just opening myself to all of the shows. Like, that's how I've seen Ellie on stage. Like, you know.
Yeah.
Like, and it was just sort of, I felt like it was my learning. But the weird thing was, I ended up doing Shortland Street when I was in my later teens, and it did actually it threw everything, because it, I never talk about this. It almost makes me like, it was quite traumatic, I think, because basically I had all this attention on me and I didn't want the attention. I just wanted to be an actor because I wanted to go to drama school and things like that. But it was just too much. So, like, I ended up training to be a journalist and sort of went down that avenue, but found my passion and love for directing theatre and sort of have poured all of my money, literally. I literally still pay it off.
Oh, yeah. I hear you.
Come on, I could have a nice car. Like, it doesn't matter. Like, it's fine. It's good. No, I'm joking. But, gosh, am I giving too much information?
No, this is great. It's nice to get to know you.
Where are we? Oh, so then soon I just started doing theatre, and then here we are now. And what I've been doing since I'm in London is working a lot in journalism, which is quite good. It's, like, dynamic. Like, my heart's in it while I'm at work because it's, like, it's interesting enough. But my heart is in the theatre, you know? Like, I go to all the West End shows and, like, that's where my heart is.
And have you done much sort of theatre directing or producing in the UK?
No, I came back and did once the musical in 2019, just before COVID, and that was in Auckland, sorry.
All right, yep.
So that was like a nice experience. It was a huge project, so it was a bit like, wow, I now doing a one-person show, I think, oh, how did I do that other one? Okay, anyway, but not so much, but I probably will get off this. We'll probably stop talking and I'll probably think of things that I have.
So what are you hoping the audiences will take from Life on a Loop when they come to Auckland? And I guess, are you and Ellie expecting any different reactions being a New Zealand audience?
Oh, well, I hope people get to, like, witness Ellie on stage in her prime and get to take away this wonderful, sentimental, uplifting, beautiful quality that the play has. Because, yeah, I feel really strongly about the quality of it and of Ali as a person and as a performer. And I just think it's so cool. I'm so glad she eventually agreed to do it. Because I feel like it's going to be great. And also, like, I know a lot of people in Auckland, so it's like, yay, you get to catch up with lots
of
people.
It's a bit of a reunion, yeah.
Yeah.
And do you have plans to take it anywhere beyond Auckland after this?
No, but every time we promote it on Facebook, we get so many people saying, please bring it to Tauranga, please bring it to Hamilton. It's like, oh, obviously Wellington, where she was huge. So let's see how this goes and then...
Yeah, good test run.
Sorry, the line's frozen. Oh,
there we go. We just blipped out for a second there.
Yeah.
So give us all the details then, Jesse. When's it on? Times? Where can people book?
Cool. It's Life on a Loop. It's on at Kew Theatre in Rangatira, the main theatre. It's from the 11th to the 16th of November, Tuesday to Sunday, short, sharp season, strictly limited. Get your tickets at Kew Theatre.
Brilliant.
Thank you so much, Stephen, for doing this. It's so nice of you.
Oh, it's fantastic. We've always been great fans, and it's lovely to see you coming back to New Zealand, and what a bonus that you're bringing Ellie with you. Emma and I will certainly be coming along to support, and we'll look forward to seeing you. And we wish you a fantastic season and safe travels home.
Thank you so much. Cool.
3, 2, 1. so tired of telling lies, so here's the truth.
It's always been about you.
Space to find myself.
I'm sympathetic for the back and forth aesthetic.
Such a complicated boy, can't you tell?
We're just a reoccurring problem, but I didn't wear a condom. I think selfishly you're kinda glad too. Maybe I want us to make it like for real this time. I made it. I'm so tired of telling lies, so here's the truth. It's always been about you.
Baby, I need you to tell me something. You think we're gonna make it this time? 'Cause I think I love you. I think I love you.
Boyfriend, We Three, just released in the last week, October 17th. Before that, of course, the fabulous Jesse Peach. Look, I've known him since he was a young teenager, and him and his fabulous mother who did amazing things in the education system, especially out west. Just a genuine, genuine nice person who works so hard to create wonderful magical theatre. So go and support. He's bringing Ali all the way from the UK. I want him to play to full houses. Jump on qtheatre.co.nz. Now, coming up in the next few weeks, we've got a busy couple of weeks ahead, but then we've got some gaps middle of November onwards. So if you have something to promote, or new music to play, or new books to launch, or perhaps you're starting to think about the Christmas season, do you have markets and events taking place? Email us info@kickarts.org.nz. And a massive thank you to Dolphin Theatre for supporting us throughout this month of October, which is coming to an end. It's Christmas shopping time. I was down in Hamilton yesterday and I was so impressed with the Base. I haven't been there for so long and I forgot what such a great shopping complex that is, indoors and outdoors, and I've decided that's where I'm going to do my Christmas shopping. The other bonus is you don't run into too many people you know. You know when you're on that Christmas shopping hunt and then you stop and you run into people and it just slows it down? Heading to the Base. Emma is still away for another week in Oz. She's already in Newcastle. I've seen the social media go up. She is the social media queen, that girl. And so next week I'm really excited to welcome in Kristen, who is going to be our guest co-host, and she's no stranger to the airwaves, but perhaps not so much here in New Zealand. So looking forward to catching up with her as well. We've got Titirangi Theatre in the house. We've got author Eleanor Elliot Thomas, and our friends from Chosen Records are sending in a couple of fabulous acts who hopefully might even play live for us. We're going to close the show now with Shane Walker with Why My Girl. Have a fabulous rest of your long weekend. I hope you're doing something really cool and relaxing tomorrow. Have a great week, and make sure you kick some arts.
Oh Stella, me why my girl, do you remember? He said a kiss under the Cinderella, my one and only forever. Can't get
me and my fears, my lady. This moment that we share is written in the stars, my baby. Did you see that I've been hurt? And you came into my life when I was a mess in the dirt. My wife might tell me calling. I can't stop thinking about you, naughty, naughty. Why you never take a look at me and tell me what you see? I've got somebody who loves me for me. Oh, Stella, me white, my girl, do you remember? We shared a kiss after December. Can't get you out of my head. Cinderella, my one and only, is forever. Can't get you out of my head. No, cause I wanna. I'll be taking a cruise to the valley where you at, my baby. Right around the corner. I will never give up till I see you, girl. Oh, my fuck, I said it wrong. The gumbo type, the fine angel, yes, I want that. I'll bring you into a new in my life. I don't know what I'm feeling, but I know that a love like this will never come back unless I make you my wife. Tell me that you want me to be Mr. Right to a thing I can't cater to you. Girl, do you remember? We shared a kiss after December. Can't get you out of my head. Oh, Stella, my hope I'm not Cinderella.
In a week, don't forget to brush your teeth and don't forget to go to sleep. We'll be going live, same time under the stars, saying blah, 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 blah. Let's go kick some R, R, R. Go kick some R, R, R. Go kick some R, R, R. Good night.